Okay, the press X alarm is sounding. Quickly gather your things. Put on your body armor, equip your melee weapon, and follow me through this interactive tutorial introduction to this week's episode. Or if you already know what you're doing, you can skip all of that and we'll get straight on with today's episode of Press X to continue. My name is Stefan Powell. I am your guide through these early parts of the game. Sadly, usually I'd have my other half, my professional other half, Einel Tomlinson, with me, but he is too busy currently being a theatre star to be with us, but he's going to be back next week, which is very exciting. So until then, we have got the YouTuber, the gaming expert, Luke Westaway with us. Luke, I got your surname wrong then. How embarrassing for me.
More embarrassing to do a podcast without Einel on it. This is the second time I've missed Einel now. What's going on?
Yeah,
feel back like next week. That's no good to me, is it, Stefan?
No, it's not really. I mean, you feel like you haven't forgiven me for the first time.
No.
Luke does bear and hold grudges, so I will...
Yes, I do. Yeah. Yes. It's one of my main personality attributes.
And I'd also like to welcome back the newest member of the XC Beasts. It's Sophie, also known as Kadea Online. Hello, Sophie. Thanks for being here.
Hello. I also think that Einel is just avoiding us at this point.
I would take it very personally if I were you. I would take it very personally. Yeah. As have I, because it's been all of this year on my own, and I'm starting to think that actually he hates me.
No. Is Einel coming back?
Yeah, we'll soon find out. If you turn on next week and he's not here, then something has gone wrong. Maybe he has just abandoned us. Maybe he was a figment of my imagination this whole time.
Einel could be quiet quitting, you know.
he's ghosting us all. That's what he's doing.
Yeah. I think he made up the tour.
Yeah, he's not actually on tour. Yeah.
Photoshop.
There was no one in those theatres. What's he on about? But look, lovely to have you both back. Last week was really fun. So it's great to have you back on with us here in the Continue Club. Now, you know this by now, Sophie, it is the Unsung Hero Games to get things going. So what is your Unsung Hero game? If someone was to tune in to a Kadea stream, if they were to follow you on social media and you were to tell them about an Unsung Hero game, what would it be?
I have two.
Okay, go for it.
I have one that I think is just an unsung hero because everyone always knows it's a good game, but no one like brings it up unprompted, and that is Sleeping Dogs.
Oh,
okay.
Because it is a fantastic game. I haven't played it in a long time, but it's one that's
brilliant.
Whenever you bring it up, everyone has the same reaction.
Yeah, Sleeping Dogs, yeah.
And it's just like, we were supposed to get so much more afterwards as well, and that hasn't happened. But either way, and then there's obviously like I feel like we all know it, but there's obviously younger generations that aren't going to know this game. How are they going to know to go play that? So go play that one. But also, and I might get absolutely rinsed for mentioning a mobile game.
No, not at all.
Monster Hunter Now is so good.
Oh.
If you like mobile games, like Pokemon Go, it's by Niantic as well, but it is much, much better for like the player experience.
Oh, I did a million, billion, billion hours of Pokemon Go, obviously, but I didn't try Monster Hunter. Was it Monster Hunter Now?
Yeah, it's not
Monster
that.
Right.
I don't know many people within the UK, even when you can play with other players. So, you know, in Pokemon Go, you can do like a raid, for example, and you have to use a raid pass, and they're very expensive now. With Monster Hunter Now, you can do these hunter-thons and all these different types of dimensional fights, and it will match you with people all over the world. So you won't be fighting alone, and you won't have to pay for that. And you can see that they're all from Asia, and I need more people over this side. I want more people to play with. But every new update, it seems like, oh, damn, this is actually a good update. This is actually really good for the player, as opposed to love you, Pokemon Go. But it feels like every update, oh, this is more expensive. Oh, that's less fun for us. Okay.
Oh, right.
You got rid of spotlight hours. Why?
I get a feeling with Pokemon Go, they're sort of squeezing the last bits of the juice out of it before sort of... I mean, I could be speaking out of turn here, and feel free people to message in or get involved in Discord and tell me I'm wrong. I know Mel, who helps on Press X, is one of those who's probably going to be shouting at her device right now listening to this. I get a sense that with Pokemon Go, they're sort of squeezing the last bit of juice out of it, and then before sort of consigning it, before consigning it to the bin. Do you know what I mean? And you don't get that sense with Monster Hunter Now.
See, it's tough because I feel like Pokemon Go is still incredibly, incredibly popular.
Yeah, I still see people, roving groups of people with the battery packs, like in parks and stuff, you know, like I still see
in my local area, we have a giant WhatsApp group and there's like hundreds of people. And it's very nice when you go out on like specific days, like community days, and you'll see everyone else doing it. Kind of feels like 2016 again. But, and obviously it is the biggest franchise in the world. It has popularity, but the experience is just, it's not as fun since things got more expensive. So
what's better about it than Pokemon? I just assumed it was just a reskin, but with like, you know, wyverns and whatnot instead of...
It's more active in a way, as in I can walk down the road quick catching Pokemon all day and it just gets a bit like, what am I doing this for really? I don't really care about the battling in Pokemon Go either. Whereas in Monster Hunter now you have... all like your standard weapons, not all of them, but they just added the insect glaive. I play with dual blades. They have long swords. They've got everything you could possibly want. You got all this fancy armor, loads of monsters in there now, but you just walk down the road and you fight the monster. Yes, it is tapping, but it's a bit more than what you do in Pokemon Go because you have to like dodge and you can do specials and it just looks fancier. But it's a bit more active and I go on a lot of walks. So it's nice for me to go through the park and I can do that as well as looking at nature.
I've just been looking at the front cover of Sleeping Dogs. So Sleeping Dogs was a 2012 game, wasn't it? So it's been out for a while. That was such an iconic cover. It's a Japanese action adventure game, wasn't it? Sleeping Dogs. Oh no, it's based
it's
in
Hong
Japan,
Kong.
Right? Hong Kong, sorry, based in Hong Kong. And that was such a good game. Why don't we talk about Sleeping Dogs as much? Actually,
exactly.
Is it because did Yakuza steal its thunder a little bit? Action adventure.
I think Grand Theft Auto stole it.
Well, I mean, that's a good point.
It was a great game. It had a brilliant story, and the combat was really fun. The driving was good, as I remember it. Yeah, it's just I don't know.
I just think they didn't do anything else because they were intending to do more, and there was also like a film production they were planning as well. And I don't know if that film actually came out. I feel like I've seen a screenshot. But I didn't realize it wasn't just a standalone game. It was actually a sequel to another game, but it wasn't a direct sequel. It was like a, what's that word that they use when it's
spiritual,
like a spiritual
successor?
Successor, yeah. to this other series. And I had no idea until I made a video about it. And I'd say, oh, so.
Yeah. Well, great show. Sleeping Dogs and Monster Hunter Now are Kadea's unsung hero games. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you like them? Should we talk about them more? Let us know. You know what to do. Get in the Discord, find us on social media and get involved in the conversation. In the Discord, Demi suggested the Xenosaga trilogy. Anybody play this? It's a JRPG from the PS2. Amazing characters, awesome actors, and a style that made some really cool graphics at the time, which tested what the PlayStation 2 could do. Also nice that we didn't have to wait 10 years between each installment back then. That it was cool. You know, when you had a trilogy and it actually came out like a couple of years after the other, like, you know, Demi saying here, you got the complete trilogy in a decent amount of time. And there were some plot twists that absolutely destroyed me as a kid. I love a good plot twist. I love an emotional story. So the Xenosaga trilogy, if you're into your JRPGs, is an unsung hero game, according to Demi. Go and check that one out. Right. Okay. It is trivia time. Now, you know the drill by now. Get your facts and your questions in.
Oh, I know the drill. All right, Stefan. I come up with the correct answer and you steal it.
I didn't steal it.
Yeah, I don't want to go. I don't want to go first this time because I want to steal someone else's. Like,
I didn't steal it. I was inspired by Luke's suggestion. So there's such a the channel where you put the questions in, by the way, is so secret that Einel and myself, whose picture is on the artwork for this podcast, haven't even got access to this Discord channel. Wow. So we can't even see what these questions are. That's how secret the questions are. So get your suggestions in. Thanks to Owen for this question in the Discord. This is, by the way, the leaderboard going into this one. Keza McDonald still riding high, number one. Yes, Andy Noor, by the way, is the genius in our Discord who did some clever algorithm and maths that means it doesn't matter how many answers you've had a chance to answer, it still figures out where you would be in the leaderboard by doing some stuff in the background, right? Keza's number one. Bendy Townsend's number two. I somehow have found myself in number three.
Somehow, he says. We know how.
Luke Westaway, who gets the right answers but doesn't necessarily choose them, is down in 11th. One spot below Lucy James. Kadea, Sophie, you are down in 15th, but then you've only had one chance to answer the question so far.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
How far down does it go? What's the sort of who's?
I don't think we need to. We don't need
that's
to.
That's got to be the lowest. I've answered one and I got it wrong.
I don't want to dwell, but you are 15th out of. There are 15. Some of the places have got multiple people. Three people tied at 7th, for example. Imogen Mellor, Ells the Witch, and Joey Grind are tied in 7th. Sophie, you're done in 15th alone, which is the bottom spot.
This is how you get people to come onto podcasts more often, isn't it?
So you're trying to climb your way up the ladder.
The only thing I can do now. The only thing I can do now is keep throwing myself at this podcast and just hope to sort of.
Keep on coming.
Grind my way up the ladder. Okay.
Now, sadly for all of us, this is a very tricky question this week. I've just looked at it. And I don't think, if any of us gets anywhere near this, I think we'll give you the point, right?
I like being last place. It's okay.
It's fine. Producer Dave says he will accept a general answer. So we don't need the specifics here. He will accept an answer that is in the general realm. That's very kind of you, Producer David. For doing that. We're talking ballpark here, okay? So this isn't a very specific question.
Who wants to be a continuer?
The question is this. In 2013, how did cosmic rays from a solar flare help a speedrunner improve his time on Super Mario 64? So how did cosmic rays... Luke West on his face... For those of you listening,
no, I know. No, I'm.
Is a picture. His hand. His head is good. His
I think.
Hand.
I think I know. Thinking. I think.
You
I
think you know it? Well, interesting. So, how did cosmic rays from a solar flare help speedrunner? A speedrunner's name was Daughter Teabag. How did that solar flare and the cosmic rays from it help him improve his time on Super Mario 64?
This is annoying because I'm sure that this is something that I would have looked up as like a really silly video idea.
It might have been in my idea list right now, and I haven't done the research. Yeah, or it's popped. There's a reel. Someone's done a reel about this on Instagram or something, and it's popped up, and you might have seen it. Cosmic rays from a solar flare. They helped someone improve their time on Super Mario 64. How did that happen? Just a reminder of the leaderboard. Keza's in one, Benedict's in second, I'm in third, Cassie's in fourth, Einel's in fifth, Shay Thompson's in sixth, Imogen, Els and Joey Grind are tied on seventh, and then we've got Lucy James in 10th, Luke Westaway in 11th, and other names below that, and then Kadir down there in 15th at the moment.
Okay.
So we will bring you the answer at the end of this episode. Right, okay then. This came up in conversation a lot online because of something that happens in Crimson Desert. And it was so interesting that IGN wrote a piece about it. And basically, it's about, at the end game, whether or not you should be allowed to be overpowered or not. You finished the game, can you now just go and romp around and do whatever you want? Or actually, should there still be restrictions on what you can and can't do? You've put your hours in, you finished the game, but no, you still can't choose to do what you want. And that's basically because there is a 15-minute time limit on players to be able to fly on a dragon at the end of the game. And to get to the dragon, you've got to unlock the story before you can mount it, but then you can only play it with the dragon for 15 minutes. Now, most games, once you've finished it and you're overpowered, you can carry on and do whatever you want. So if you like this idea that games are actually saying, no, there are still rules to this world, even though you've finished the story and you can't just go and do what you want now, thank you very much.
Well, it depends, because obviously if you've got a game with like New Game Plus or there's stuff beyond to keep playing, and I'm so out of the loop with Crimson Desert, but I think that's the kind of game that's huge. So in that one respect, it makes sense that you don't suddenly just get super overpowered. But I like the idea of getting something that you didn't have before to maybe new challenges, I'm not sure. The idea, though, of a 15-minute time limit, right, cooldown of 50 minutes, 15-minute time limit,
so that's it. So I think you can fly in it for 15 minutes, but then you've got to wait another 50 minutes for it to cool down before you can get back on it again.
I think, generally, the reason I'm so out of the loop with this game is just because it's definitely not one for someone like me who doesn't have that many hours in the... I mean, I could spend all day playing games, but I'd get nothing done. But when you've got so much you have to do in a day, this isn't a game you can just dip in, do a little bit. This seems like a lot. and I don't have, like, I don't want to sit there and wait 50 minutes for a cooldown. That's ridiculous. So I think you should get something. I've spoken to you before about Pocopia, and at the end of that, you get, like, after the story, you get a nice ability that you didn't have access to before. I won't say too much, but that's nice. Just something that makes your life a bit easier, not necessarily, like, overpowered in damage ways.
Yeah. That'd
be good.
Luke, what do you think about this?
It sounds bizarre. Obviously, the idea of a cooldown is something that we're all familiar with, and you get them a lot in, you know, games that are online, and there it's kind of fair enough. You know, I remember in my World of Warcraft days, it was basically a screen full of little cooldown squares, and you were always just kind of, you know, like waiting, managing cooldowns, waiting for things. And, you know, some of those were really, really quite long. And you know, that obviously, that felt fair enough. It is odd though. With the caveat that I haven't played it, and maybe in context it sort of makes sense, but it does strike me as extremely strange in a single player game. Because like, why? What are you gonna get done in 20? What are they worried you're gonna get done in 20 minutes with a dragon that you wouldn't do in, like, is 15 minutes only enough to, like, raise half the landscape or something? Like,
yeah, I wonder if it's just a way to try and just tease people to come back, because I suppose there's a concern about a drop off. You finish the story now, you don't want to, there's other quests you could go and finish or whatever, but actually people just say, oh, I've done the story, I want to, you know, I've mainlined the story, I'm gone now, thank you very much. And it's just sort of a little carrot at the end of the stick to sort of encourage people to come back. Maybe that was the thought, but it is. I think if you've got to that stage and you still want to play it, then you're going to be playing it whether there's a cooldown or not, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. In a game that is full of that, like, cooldowns and stuff, I'm trying to think of an example, maybe Animal Crossing or something. Like, Animal Crossing is a game where you expect to, there are some things that you can do once a day.
Yeah.
Or a few times a day. And then, like, well, I know that that's my lot now, but as far as I'm aware, Crimson Desert isn't sort of full of this sort of, like, cooldown gameplay. So I don't know. It does strike me as a bit weird. When I've finished a game like that, you know, I want to fire up the cheat menu and turn, like, all right, now I'm a flying tank.
Yeah.
Now I just, you know, now I, that's, it's San Andreas. Now I'm a flying tank.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Turn it up to 11.
And I just sort of, yeah, now I fly around and blow everything up, you know, or in Skyrim, you know, now I ride the dragon around and sort of, you know, set fire to everything. I don't know.
I feel like you mentioned, like, the dailies. I feel like dailies are a bit more, I'd be more okay with that. I feel like it's not very respectful of my time to make me come back in an hour.
No. Yeah. Well, it probably does. And again, I worry that I'm speaking, like, beyond my remit here because I haven't played Crimson Desert, but I'm aware that some of the discourse around that game is that it feels like an MMO. It's got a lot of, like, MMO trappings. Was there something like, was the game originally supposed to be an MMO, or, like, did the developers previously make MMO? I don't know. But I wonder if maybe this complaint, it kind of has emerged from that more sort of general gripe that this single player game has the trappings of a sort of online live service thing in some respects. And maybe this is kind of, you know,
I don't want to come off
a particularly frustrating example.
Silly, but I think it's the team behind Black Desert.
Yeah, I think you're right. Let's do it.
That would make more sense.
We can answer all of these questions, can't we? I think what's interesting is that, like, it's a game that has done so well, and it seems to be gone down so well, that I wouldn't be surprised if this ends up changing, though, because the narrative around it has been pretty positive, I think, from what I can see. So it'd be odd to think if they leave this. You're right. Yeah. Pearl Abyss, who makes the game, made Black Desert. They're famous for their massively multiplayer online RPGs, which is why it has the sort of set that sensibility, right? But yeah, so let's think, what do you think? Should you be allowed to be overpowered at the end there? Or actually, is it good to incentivize people to come back by restricting and limiting powers and things? Then do let us know. You know what to do. You can get involved in the Discord, find us on social media, and get involved in the conversation there as well. Also, if you've played Crimson Desert, I'm actually quite intrigued by it. And same as you, Sophie, I think games I definitely feel now I've got to respect my time, and I think that's something that a lot more gamers are feeling like that, haven't they? The games have got to respect people's time because people are time poor now, and you know, in different ways than they were before. But I have looked at that and thought, oh, I'm kind of drawn to Crimson Desert actually, so I might give it a go. I'm definitely going to try and find out more. But let us know what you think. Get involved in the conversation. Right, have you seen these clips going around about NVIDIA's generative AI and graphics?
Yes.
Have you seen these? What did you make of it? So people who don't know, so a new feature from NVIDIA, they're the makers of microchips, and they sort of which has been driving the sort of AI revolution that we hear about all the time. Well, they're promising cinematic quality graphics using their generative AI technology, which changes the appearance of games to make them look more sort of realistic, quote unquote. A lot of people really don't like what they've seen in the snippets that have been shown. Loads of these clips online, if you want to go and dig it out and have a look to see what they look like. What did you make of them, Luke, when you saw them?
I think they make an extremely poor first impression. It's just personally, it felt bizarre to me that this was being presented as a thing that clearly NVIDIA thought you're ready to be impressed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, okay, everyone, get ready to smile. Here's what we've done. And then you see what they've done. So, I mean, it's really, really blown up as an issue. And, you know, the world doesn't need anyone else getting cross about it probably, but I mean, that is my position. I didn't like it at all. I think the core of it is that, basically it changes the visual style. It changes the look like of a game so much, and it's hard to argue that it doesn't compromise a developer's intent in terms of how the game looks. And, you know, the very, very first example that they show, you know, that everyone has seen kind of shows this, which is the Resident Evil Requiem stuff, the main characters in that, you know, Grace, they just sort of bring this slider across and it just looks like a completely different person, or, you know, it kind of turns it into a sort of homogenized beauty filter. This is what, you know, AI trained on massive amounts of data has decided that the beauty standard is. So we've made the character, it's like, look, we made the character conventionally beautiful. It's almost like they positioned it more of a kind of like a lighting thing. Like improve the lighting, we improve the visuals and stuff. And I mean, I guess in theory, there's nothing wrong with that, but obviously what you're looking at, what the demo shows is not that at all. It's like a complete sort of reimagining of how the characters look. Yeah, no, I didn't like it.
Fair enough. What did you think, Sophie?
Well, it's an awkward thing really, because I actually really like DLSS technology in general. Obviously the first one dropped, the first iteration of it went terribly, but it improved. It improved. So we know that NVIDIA can learn from things. So since then, like it's AI upscaling, the frame generation, all of that stuff. I think that is great because it means that gamers can play things in better quality with, like, you know, cheaper cards, more budget friendly cards. And that's what I like. I like that they are able to do that because we can't afford new GPUs, we can't afford new RAM. Let us play on what we have. So in terms of future proofing, I like that. At the end of the day, the entire goal of this is to just kind of use less energy to generate a frame, and a good quality frame at that, or better than you would have got natively. So DLSS, I like. I hate that they've now put under this umbrella this new part of it, which, as Luke said, is just kind of feels like they're filtering, changing an original image to something else, which is going to be based on whatever machine decides, basically. I don't like that side of it. I think it looks terrible. I do think it can get better. And I know that anytime you bring this up, someone will be in your comments just like, oh yeah, but they said that the developers have full control over whether they use this or not. But it's like, yeah, but the developers have control over a machine, essentially. It's not going to be as exact as what they've made themselves, and I do think it changes the artistic intent too much.
Yeah.
I just want the original image, but better quality, not like changed in any way.
It definitely, so there'll be examples that people can go and look at. If you're just listening to this, you have a little Google of it. And I just, what strikes me is of all the different images that have been out there, they make everything look the same. Do you see what I mean? That isn't there for...
Yeah.
All the images are treated to the end up having the same sort of sheen to them, the same sort of gloss, the same sort of look, essentially. And it sort of homogenizes the images a little bit. And that's what I would be a bit concerned about.
And that also changes the mood of the scene as well.
Exactly.
Like you can see it quite clearly in Assassin's Creed Shadows, one, the screenshot. There is a very clear difference between the nice one with the shadows, but then how can you have Assassin's Creed Shadows without the shadows? Because, I mean, this tech in general deals with lighting and shadows terribly. And you look at the other one and it's just like, well, that's a sunny day.
Yeah.
So that's not what we're looking at. We're looking at like this moody, lovely like shot of Japan, and then suddenly it's like, well, that's completely different.
Yeah, I haven't seen the Assassin's Creed Shadows one. I've seen the ones that let's have a look at the shadows one. But like, yeah, do you think the pushback has been enough? Oh, I see. I see your take. Yeah, and look, the Assassin's Creed Shadows one is totally different. Yeah, that's not the point of this game, is it? But do you think that the pushback of this, Luke, will be enough to make them change course? Or is this sort of inevitable? We've got to get used to it.
I mean, I certainly hope it's not inevitable. I don't know. I mean, the pushback has been fairly immense. I'm probably not up on the very, very latest that's happened here, but I'm sure I saw a quote from Nvidia's boss that was basically something to the effect of like, no,
the gamers are wrong.
Yeah, it's fine, actually. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe by the time you listen to this, there'll have already been a sort of like massive climb down or something from Nvidia. I think that the other thing about it that it feels like it's come from a point of view of like people of assuming that people who play games want them to look photorealistic, which isn't true at all. I think I like that video games look like games, and I love that the video games that I'm playing now and the way that they look when I look at them in 20 years' time will have a sort of nostalgic visual aesthetic style to them that I'm not even really aware of now. Mm. You know, when I played games on like the PlayStation 2 or the Xbox 360, I thought like, how could it ever look better than this? You know, this is like, this is supreme. Like, this could be a movie. You know, I'm like showing my parents sort of like Metal Gear Solid cutscenes and being like, look, this, it's just like a movie or something. And now when I look at that now, obviously it doesn't look so good, but it looks of its time, and it has a charm, and the charm comes from this is what they made with the tools that they had available at the time. And Resident Evil Requiem is, I'm playing through it now, it's just so visually sumptuous and fantastic, but you know, it will in the future look like a 2026 video game. And I think that that's good.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something to preserve. And that's not something to be like upscaled away, like constantly and like smoothed over, you know, like these aren't problems. The way a game looks isn't like a problem to be fixed. It's, you know,
it's part
fine.
Of the
like,
charm. No, I get it. I get it. Absolutely. Yeah.
And Death Stranding 2 is right there.
Right.
If you want, that does look like a movie.
Yeah.
So yeah.
I like that people have options, but those options disappear when it's all up here. I want the variety, the diversity. I also really want to point out that I feel like that tech demo was mostly for their shareholders to be like, this is what we can do. And they didn't really care what the gamers had to say.
Yeah.
But also, it was running on 250 90s.
Like, yeah, extremely
chunky
hardware.
It's going to be a while
till
it hits us, and they're going to go through a lot of iterations.
Yeah, so we will see. We will keep sort of updated on that, because no doubt there's going to be more conversations and more of these sorts of stories coming out in the coming months and weeks and years to come, isn't it? So we will keep you posted and let us know what you thought. And maybe you really liked it, actually. Maybe you thought, this is really cool. I don't know what everybody's got a problem about, or maybe you feel strongly that it's not the direction we should go. Let us know. Get involved in the conversation. We'd love to hear from you. Now, we talked a little bit about this last week. I've spending a lot of time on trains at the moment because of a newer job I've got. And I need some good things. I want to spend the time that I'm on the train doing something productive, not just scrolling, on social media and just like, you know, spending my life doom scrolling. I want to be playing stuff. I want to be reading books. I want to be learning stuff. So what are the good games I could be playing on my Switch 2 basically is what I'm asking for. Tips, thoughts, suggestions. Would love to know. Or mobile games, anything you can play when you're on the move. So at the moment, I'm replaying a game called Golf Story that I played on the original Nintendo Switch, which is a lovely RPG based around golf and a character who tries to rekindle his love of golf after the loss of his dad, which is really cool. I also downloaded a game called Commandos 2, which was a PC game when I was a kid. So I wanted a hit of nostalgia. Oh, right. So I've got, there's a Switch 2 version or Switch version of that. Doesn't translate amazingly well to the handheld environment, I won't lie. So basically, I need good games. What can I play? What can I play on the move? What do you think?
Well, I mean, Hades 2, it feels like the...
Yeah, I've not done 2, so that's I'm writing old school. I'm writing this down.
Yeah. That feels like the obvious answer. Gadea, obviously, you are all over Silksong. I feel like that's a pretty...
I wouldn't play it on a train, though. Okay. I would get too distracted and I'd miss my stop or something stupid. I also don't play on your Switch in general. I'm sorry. I need my controller. Otherwise, I can't do anything at all. I was going to say Pocopia would have been my top. Just because it is very easy to, like, there's no stakes. You can just turn it off. Like, oh my God, this is my stop. That's why I play that on the train a lot lately. But yeah. Also, I play a lot of Balatro.
Yeah, I've had to stop playing Balatro because I was finding myself getting lost in its
that's fair
its grasp yeah in its web. But I was good. I used to play a lot of Football Manager on the move, Football Manager mobile, but I want to try different. I want to like a variety of stuff. I have this little Dorfomatic, I think it's called. It's a little like square building game. Do you ever play the game Carcassonne, the board game?
Yeah.
It's a bit like that, but you play it on your handheld.
Do you know what? Fun. Did you ever play Reigns?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Reigns.
It's called Reigns. Yeah. I think there are two of them now.
Yeah. You're Reigns, like the king and you've got to choose between the cards, haven't you?
Yeah. I actually don't know if that's on the Switch, but I played it on my phone and it was just, you know, it's just really fun. Sort of like it presents you with just basically like, sort of binary decision. You're the monarch, and you're just sort of presented with like, hey, there's been a plague in or whatever. Like, do you think we should sort of send money to fix that? And everything you sort of, it's like you're kind of moving resources around, but just through like swiping left and right to say yes and no. And you're trying to keep everyone happy and trying to keep everything in balance. But it's got this emergent story that is really fun.
Reigns, yeah, I played Papers, good. Please on the move. That's very good. That's quite an old game now. Quite difficult. Now, Glenn Moore, we have him on, says you can play narrative games whilst you're on the move. I'm not convinced. Do you think you can play narrative games when you're on the move?
I do. And actually, I reckon, like often I think roguelikes get sort of like, it's like, oh, this would be perfect for being on the move. But actually, the more I think about it and the more we talk about it, I'm not really sure they are, because I've been in a situation a lot of times where I'll be playing Hades or something on my Switch. I'll be in the middle of a run. Then I have to stop, get off the train. And then like later I fire it up. I can't really remember what was happening or where I was in the run or what was going on. And the muscle memory's kind of dimmed a bit. And, you know, that run just sort of gets sort of squished almost immediately, even if it was a really good one. So I think narrative games are kind of strong for this, actually. I've got one. Dredge. Did you play Dredge?
Oh, yeah, Dredge. Dave the Diver as well.
I played Dave the Diver for the first time this January.
Yeah, that's a great success.
So good. So good. Yeah, that's a good one. I was going to suggest, I haven't played it yet, but I've been meaning to. Inscription is on Switch.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Inscription. Mm. I've not come across that. That's good. Producer David just mentioned to say that he's put 414 hours into Balatro. 414 hours, Dave.
Dang.
Wow. I thought he had his claws in me. Okay, these are good suggestions. Thank you very much. Look, anybody listening, if you've got some ideas as well for games on the move games, train games, And they let us know because I am all ears.
Cuphead. Cuphead's brilliant on Switch.
It's hard, doing it?
Cuphead it's very is so hard.
But that's fine. That's fine. But
I get through the first run and gun until I had to change all of the controls because I literally could not do it.
But you die, you fail so quickly that it's actually quite good for like transports, you know.
Okay, you'll sort I take of try, your point.
It's something to work at, you know. You could spend like a week of train journeys on one boss fight, but then by the end you'll get it, and each attempt is only, you know, probably less than a minute. You know, good
shot. Okay, so train game suggestions, please. There are some there from Luke and Kadea, which are great, which I've written down like an old man with a pen and paper. So if you want to send us some ideas as well, love to hear from you. Please get in touch and share your thoughts with us. Right, okay, before wrapping up then, Luke, you've been playing a game called Screamer.
Screamer, yeah. Screamer is a whole lot of fun. I haven't put as many hours into it as I am going to. So, you know, don't consider this a review from someone who's like completed it or anything, but I do want to highlight it. So it's a sci-fi arcade racing game, which is absolutely completely my jam.
Yeah.
But it's also got this extremely melodramatic anime, like, storyline, plot, like voice acting, you know, the works and stuff that kind of goes along with it. So it's not just a, you know, it's not arcadey in like Outrun or something where you fire it up and it's like, now all I do is play. It does have this kind of big story thing to it. And mechanically it's got some really interesting ideas. Do you remember in Gears of War? I know this, it feels like a sort of weird tangent, but do you remember in Gears of War, they had a thing called, I think it was called Active Reload, where you could speed up reloading your weapon with a little QTE, a kind of sort of a, like a line would move along a bar. And if you kind of hit it at the right time, you could reload faster.
Yeah.
So it has like that, but for upshifting in your car. So you don't have to do the gear shifts, but when your car sort of shifts up, there's like a little moment, and if you time it right, you get like a little boost. And I think that's pretty clever. You know, that's a nice way of making it feel like you're more engaged with the driving without making you, you know, sort of like keep an eye on revs and actually like upshift at the right times and stuff, which is a bit more, you know, gets you closer to kind of like a driving sim and further away from arcade driving. Yeah.
So is this for people, because I know you love your driving games.
I do, yes.
Is this for people like you who love a driving game, or is it for someone... Are you a big driving game player, Sophie?
No. I've played Forza.
Oh, yeah, there we are. Same. Oh, so could Sophie and I dabble?
Micro Machines.
Classic.
Yeah, 100%. If Forza Horizon... And if Horizon 5. Is the Forza... Yeah. If Forza Horizon is your jam, then I think you could really get on with this. The developers, I believe, made the Hot Wheels DLC.
Mm-hmm.
That's what made me play the game. I was so excited for that.
And so are you playing it on, what are you playing it on?
I'm playing it on PC, just, you know, through Steam.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it is coming to the Switch too. So maybe actually this could...
It's £60 on the PlayStation Store and the Xbox Store at the moment. And it's £55 in game, £50 on Steam.
Oh, I think there is currently no Switch 2 version planned. So you're out of... You're out of luck there. But PS5 and Xbox, it's on. It is absolutely gorgeous. It has a... It is so, so beautiful. I think... Most of the time, I love an arcade racer, like one from a smaller developer especially, but usually they sort of end up kind of going for a visual style that is quite sort of retro, you know, maybe a bit blocky, maybe a bit kind of like sprite-y or something for that kind of nostalgic hit. And I think that comes from the fact that when we think of arcade racing, it does tend to be like a nostalgic genre because it's something that used to be huge in video games and it isn't anymore. But this game it's so visually sumptuous. It's beautiful. And it's got a photo mode that is, I mean, I love a photo mode. And this photo mode, like, absolutely kicks ass. It's so fun. I've got some brilliant, I'll put on my Instagram some Screamer photo mode stuff because I've spent more time already in the photo mode than I have like playing anything else in Screamer, but it's fun. It's got a sort of twin stick control, which is quite novel. So you obviously that your left analog stick steers the car left and right, and then the other analog stick makes the car drift, which is not generally how drifting is handled in games, but it's kind of interesting. The developer Milestone, they made a Hot Wheels game, Hot Wheels Unleashed Turbocharged, yeah. And they've also made the Monster Jam Monster Truck game, which I played a bit of, and that similarly has this kind of like twin stick thing, because which kind of makes sense in monster trucks, because I don't know how much you know about monster trucks, but the rear wheels could kind of, you know, be independently controlled a bit. So I don't know. It won't be for everyone, I think, like that drifting mechanic and the twin stick thing. I know I'm in some WhatsApp chats with other like motorsport video game purists who are like quite turned off by the idea,
yeah,
of the twin stick drifting, but I don't know. I think you should give it a shot. It's a cool game.
Okay, so Luke likes it. It's got a Metacritic score of 76, which is a bit, sort of like a, that's solid, isn't it? Sometimes we get obsessed by it. And you can see if some people don't like that, they're not going to like it. But if you do like it, you do. So it might be a bit Marmite for people.
I think if you just watch a trailer and you'll know immediately.
If it's for you.
Yes. It will either be so for you or you'll be like, Luke's lost his mind. Why does he think this is good? Yeah.
Well, look, if you've played Screamer as well, let us know what you think. Do you like the its novel approach to steering and drifting? Let us know. Do get involved in the comments as usual. Right. The big question from today's show, when our producers come up with a question based on what we have been chatting about, is this. What part of your life needs a 50-minute cool down? Producer David says he needs a 50-minute cool down on eating chocolate. What would you think? I need a 50-minute cool down between cups of tea. I drink so much tea that it's probably a problem.
Okay. Well, let's see.
What do you think?
You know what it would be quite...
No, you go, Luke. You're already on it. You got it.
You know what it would be quite good for is if you find that there's a word in your vocabulary that you tend to overuse. That could be quite good.
Yeah.
I mean, being the age I am, I use the word like sort of all the time.
I do sometimes, that as well.
Yeah, and sometimes I listen to myself back on recordings and stuff and I'm like, well, there you go. And I'm like, God, I say like a lot. So if I cooled it down, maybe I could just receive a small electric shock every time until the cool down's elapsed. And
yeah, I'm sure we can sort that.
My behavior.
I'm sure we can sort that. What about you, Sophie? Have you got something you need to have a little break between?
Checking social media.
Oh, that's a good one. That's a good
50-minute cool down on Instagram.
It's not going to be ideal, powerful. But, you know, I would be so much more productive.
Oh, that's a good one. I should have thought. Why didn't I think of that?
Mark Zuckerberg is dispatching killer drones to your location as we speak. That is too good an idea. They can't let that get out.
Yeah. Good. It's a good answer. That's very good, Sophie. Right. Okay. So time for the answer then to this week's trivia question. Thanks again to Owen for coming up with it and putting it in the Discord. In 2013, how did cosmic rays from a solar flare help a speedrunner improve his time on Super Mario 64? That speedrunner's name was Dr. Teabag. Right, Luke, you were last time guessing.
Yeah, but so, he thinks he knows.
Oh, fair enough. Okay, good thinking. I'll go first then. How could a solar flare help him? I think that did it have an impact on the way the screen was showing the game and therefore you could see like a glitch in the level or something like that?
So that's literally what I was going to say as well, because I'm thinking if it's 64, it's going to be a CRT or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so probably going to be impacted by a ray. Maybe then you could see something that he didn't see before.
See something different. Okay.
A skip or a glitch or an entire like invisible platform.
Yeah. Okay, well, we can go with that. Sophie, we can have the same answer. That's all right. Luke, what are you saying?
Okay.
Because I can't think of another one, Sophie, so we've got to stick with that.
My memory of this is hazy as a hazy maze cave, but I'm pretty sure it was something to do with a particular jump. I think this is going to be a general answer, but we know that's acceptable,
that's
right?
Fine.
It was something to do with a particular jump. I think it was in the TikTok clock level. But basically, there was a jump or a move that should have been impossible that this speedrunner found, and basically didn't know how it happened, why it happened. And then the entire speedrunning community sort of launched a group effort to try and figure out what the hell was going on, found it was basically completely unreplicable. This particular maneuver, I sort of picture it in my head now, kind of like it was. There's a great YouTube video that I've watched about this. There are probably several. So if you want to sort of see this in action, it's really quite amazing. And it was something to do basically with like the solar flare or whatever it was, the radiation basically briefly changed the chemical composition of the machinery running the game, and sort of made like scrambled something that made this jump possible at this particular moment. And so that's why it like can't be reproduced. I think I'm looking forward to hearing the correct answer, because I can't imagine it would be concise.
It sounds very, very convincing, Luke. So let's see what the answer is. So the answer, as written to me, now available for me to see on the script, says this. It's a bit complicated. Here are the precedes. Okay. The cosmic rays created a glitch, which allowed... Well, basically, Luke, you're right. But thanks to a phenomenon called a single event upset, he was allowed to land on a platform that he couldn't have normally landed on, because a particle collided with his N64 console and caused a 1 in the game's code to become a 0 in a 1 in 1 trillion coincidence. Oh, my God. This is known as flipping a bit. Other examples that have happened have caused voting machines to count an extra 40,000 votes in an election in Belgium in 2003, and a Qantas flight lost sight suddenly. So apparently, yeah, this solar flare can impact on code if it hits it at a very specific time.
Dang.
What a crazy answer. What a crazy question. Thank you very much for that, Owen. And well done you for watching a YouTube video on that, Luke. It gets you a point.
Well done, me, for watching YouTube videos.
I feel like we should get half points.
Do you?
I just want one so I'm not last forever.
Well, you just have to, this means you're going to have to come back on the podcast, Sophie, and hope that there's easier questions next time. That was a tricky question. Well
done, Luke. Curse you, Owen.
Now, Luke.
What's it done to the rankings?
Do you want to know the good news? You're above Lucy James.
Okay, right.
You're now up
to 6th.
That's
a huge weight off my mind.
Yeah. You're up to 6th.
I love this system. I love this ranking. Wait, hang on. Am I tied with anyone in 6th place?
No, you're in 6th solo. I have slipped down to 4th. Sophie, you're down there still in 15th. But don't beat yourself up about it. It's only your first rodeo. It'll all be fine.
The rarefied air of 6th place.
Oh, you're coming for me, Luke. You're only a couple behind now. Kadea, Sophie, it's been a joy having you back with us this week. Thank you very much for being on the podcast. All the best now over the next couple of weeks. Looking forward to seeing more of your stuff online. Luke, lovely to have you back. Good luck with the music. Luke makes amazing music, by the way, that you should go and check. Where should we find all of your stuff? Luke, you go first.
Okay. Well, I mean, if you want my music, which I would love you to listen to, just search for Luke Westaway on Spotify. Or, you know, Apple or wherever you get your music. You can find me on YouTube. My YouTube channel is called Normal Adult Luke, and I do entire tightly edited playthroughs of difficult games that I try and make harder. I finished a randomized Bloodborne run with the bosses and enemies randomized quite recently. It's so funny. It throws up some really wild and random stuff. And yeah, so that's kind of my jam.
And same for you, Sophie. Where should people find all your stuff? Obviously, Kadea.
Yep, Kadea, C-A-D-A-E-A on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Twitch. Not Twitter. Don't worry about Twitter. No one cares about Twitter.
Well, that's when I first came. It's just, you know, just very
I do
briefly.
Worry about Twitter, that's the problem.
That's fair.
That's when I first came across your work, Sophie, was when Twitter was actually a lovely place in the gaming space, wasn't it? When content creators and fans and journalists could like chat, and you get a better sense of what people were into and what they liked. And it was really, a really nice, lovely little community of people there. And
it wasn't miserable.
Yeah, so it's a shame that it's not like that anymore, maybe. But yeah. So do check out Sophie's stuff. Thank you very much for being with us. It's been a joy having you on, and we will see you all very soon. We are going to be back next Tuesday. Don't forget to get involved in Discord and on social media, and we will see you very soon. Bye-bye.